Welcome to the Vegan Changemaker podcast. My name is June Fuchs, and I'm on the quest to veganize over 50% of the global human population by the year of 2030. Sounds delusional? Well, obviously, I can't do it alone, and that's why in this podcast, you're getting to meet some of the most influential, inspiring, and impactful vegans there are. May this episode help you create more vegan impact in the world, because we need your help as well, dear vegan friend. Well, aloha there, all you beautiful listeners to the Changemaker podcast. Today, I have again a massively special guest. His name is Jordi Kazamijai. I'm struggling to pronounce his name. Say it again for us, Jordi.
Jordi Kazamijai.
Kazamijan, what a beautiful name and hard to pronounce. So this person here will spill some massive wisdom in our podcast today because he's been on a journey. He just before we hit record told me that he's wrote a book and he's currently a full-time writer for a lot of vegans and companies out there. Your book is called Ethical Vegan, correct?
Correct, yeah.
There we go. Show it to the screen because I know this is going to be on YouTube as well.
Yeah, Ethical Vegan, a personal and political journey to change the world, because that's what we want to do, isn't it? Change the world. But everything is personal and everything is political.
I love that. I love that. And I'm really curious to talk to you because today's topic is specifically focused. I know we could make like a 20-hour podcast or a whole year we could talk, and I'm sure we wouldn't have talked about all the things that you've experienced because you've been in the field of vegan activism for a long time. But today I want to narrow it down and I want to talk to you about the topic of what are the most efficient or quite or a lot of efficient ways for us vegans to do activism. And I've seen, I want to use this article that you wrote. You write a lot of articles. You just told me before you write like 3 articles per day at the moment.
Yeah.
And I want to use one of your articles in which you've listed out all the different ways we as vegans can be active. So I want to use that article. But before we dive into that, I would love to, for you to have the possibility to introduce yourselves to all our beautiful listeners and watchers here.
Right. Okay. You mentioned my funny surname and name. That's because I'm originally from Catalonia, which is in the Iberian Peninsula. I'm a Catalan from origin, but I live in the UK. I've been in the UK for 30 years or more now. So I'm a British citizen with Catalan origin. I'm a zoologist. My background was in animals, study animals. But essentially, I'm so many things that through the years, I had to decide what I'm going to be using to define myself. And these days, in the last few years, I use the term, I'm an ethical vegan. I'm just an ethical vegan, somebody that follows veganism 100%. I have a zoological background. I've been an activist. I've been as a researcher. I've been an undercover investigator. I've been a campaigner for many animal protection organizations. I've been a writer. But from all these things, there are just layers that I can put and take away. But the one I cannot take away is the layer of ethical vegan. That's going to stay for there forever.
And I can relate to that. Same here. I don't think that will ever change for both of us for the rest of our lives. Right.
Indeed. And I've been vegan for 20 years. I'm known recently because I had a legal case in the UK that led to ethical veganism becoming a protected philosophical belief, a protected class, they say in America. So vegans are protected because I won a legal case. And that's why people know about me. And that's why I wrote a book, because my book explains the story of how I successfully managed that. But life gives you these opportunities and sometimes people know you for one thing or another, but I was a vegan before, I will be a vegan after. And that's the way I like to define myself.
I love that. And I'm sure that a lot of our listeners can relate to that strongly. I'm also pretty convinced that a lot of our listeners have heard your name before and are familiar with the legal case that you've been involved in. I'm going to make sure to leave some links to articles and content all around that legal case, because it's not a topic of our podcast episode today, but it's really interesting. I've looked into it a bit and I have to say, we gotta take a look at that. So bless you and thank you so much for, I'm sure that must have been draining and it must have cost you energy a lot. So thank you for going through that and having this impact created there for us, for yourself, for the whole community, basically.
No, thank you. It was hard, but it was good. And I think that's one of the lessons I like to learn from animals, is that no matter what obstacle life gives you, there's an opportunity there for you to use. And I used it.
Yes, I want to highlight that. No matter what obstacle is coming out or coming through of life, there's always an opportunity in the obstacle. So we got to use it. That's wisdom. Take note. Shall we dive into this article that you've sent me, in which you've laid out all these different types of activism that a vegan can engage in? And the way I thought we could do this, because I've never like read of an article whilst I've interviewed somebody, but the way I think we could do this is I'm going to read through those ways of activism, because I think this is just a phenomenal resource that you've created right there. And I'd love for you to just share a little bit of thoughts that come up for you when you hear every way of activism that I read out, you know. Just intuitive and spontaneous, right?
Yeah.
So like it. I'll also link, of course, the link to this article. The article itself is called "Which Type of Animal and Vegan Activism is the Most Effective?" That's the name of the article. It's been published on veganfta.com. I'll link that for everybody. And the first one that you write about here is called letter writing. Writing to companies, institutions, either complaining about something related to their product, services, or trying to persuade them to become more animal friendly. Like, do you want to share some of your experiences with that with us?
I've done a lot of that. And my conclusion is this is far more effective than you think. People assume that this is going to be writing and going to be ignored. Of course, they might ignore the first time you write because somebody reads you complain that somebody whose job is to reject the complaint, but you insist, you ask for somebody above. And if you do insist long enough, people will listen. And if they listen, the chances that they realize that why should we keep doing this if it's not a point. So there are many things. For instance, an example, I went flying to America with a particular, I'm not going to mention, so just not to upset them, a particular airline. And I had a vegan meal. I asked for a vegan meal, but had 7 non-vegan items in the vegan meal. And of course, I decided I had to complain. And I complained to the airline. Again, I was dismissed and I kept complaining. And I went higher and higher. And eventually, yeah, they changed completely the entire vegan menu of the entire airline just because they insisted. Why? Because why should they not? They didn't even know the things that were not vegan. They didn't even understand what it was. They just needed the right information. So it does work. It does work.
And it's kind of it's also like we're offering them a service because we're not the only vegans and we're probably not the only ones that will complain. So if we're leaving a feedback, it's always a service. I know I do that in restaurants sometimes when they don't have a lot of vegan options. I say, can you create more vegan options? Just thought of that. Amazing. Yeah, I think that's also one very underestimated one, writing a letter or writing an email with a complaint or a feedback. Love that.
Indeed.
So the second one we're having here is called online activism. And I know with the pandemic, a lot of people have gotten back to online activism. What you wrote here as a little introduction is creating online content, social media posts, polls, petitions, images, memes, articles, blogs, etc., and spreading them via social media. So what's like your experience and how do you find that impactful?
Well, that's the one I'm doing the most now. This is I kind of move from type of activism to another. This moment is the one I'm doing the most. Obviously, the pandemic helped me to get there, but also writing the book made me a writer. In the form of being a writer, I was able to use that new skill I already had, but I didn't know it was mine, in a way that I can benefit other people through social media. It's so diverse, that this skill, because you could just be a writer as myself, or you can be a performer of any sort, and you can be somebody that goes there and creates videos, a filmmaker. So the platform which you can use social media varies, and you can have many different skills that you learn in your profession and your education, and then you can put them in practice. And in my case, it's just writing, but there are many well-known YouTubers and influencers that they do videos, or you yourself are a perfect example of that. We're having a conversation through social media because social media has given us that. So this is one of the most common these days, my most easiest to do. Technologically, it's become easier and easier, and you can really reach many, many people.
I agree to that. There's one thing that I just want to like have a short talk with you about, because I know in social media, things can get rough really quickly, because when people are not face to face, they somehow have the courage to tell you that you're an asshole sometimes, you know, a lot of times actually. So what do you think of this strong dance that I think we're as activists, especially in the online realms, are doing a lot between where do we put our energy? Like what's worth it and what's not? Let me make an example. I just had somebody comment on a really friendly post I made that said, or asked my Facebook friends, I turned vegan because of the documentary XYZ. How did you turn vegan and when was it? And then one non-vegan started, you know, like going into that. And for me personally, I don't invest my energy into people that are not open and receptive for the message. I just don't. Like, what do you have to say to that?
I do the same thing. I have the same attitude that you have. I think the language we use in social media is a new language. We humans didn't have that before. We need to learn to speak it. So we, as a civilization, we are like a three-year-old child learning English. So we're still learning the grammar of social media. We're still learning the vocabulary. Social media still will misunderstand each other a lot. And it will improve with time, especially with generations that have grown in a world where social media exists. But because we don't have the visual image that allow us to read body language, which is so important in communication, and we have evolved to understand people, almost everything we understand it is through body language and a little bit through the words. You remove the body language because you don't see it, then the words are very insufficient to communicate the message that the person tries to communicate, will lead to misunderstanding. You merely misinterpret the tone. Something is a joke, you don't understand it's a joke. Something is offensive, you don't know it's offensive because you don't see the offensive face. It's a difficult thing. So we need to learn. And emoticons, all these signs that we have to show emotions, they don't quite do it because they just put it at the end of the story. You should have an emoticon for every word you put, so people don't know whether you've been sarcastic or not. It's a different thing. We'll need to learn. And in the process of learning, there's no point, as you said, to waste energy into misunderstanding. When you detect a problem or misunderstanding that doesn't seem to be resolved, you stop it. I have this rule of when I have arguments in social media, I give 5 times the opportunity to have a conversation of a subject of disagreement. And after that, if it carry on, I stop the conversation. It's 5 times. You probably at the 6th, you're repeating what you said to the first. So with 5 times, you have the time to say what you wanted. You have the time to listen to the other opinion. You have the time to understand the difference of opinion. And if you carry on, it's just a waste of time.
So 5 times interacting back and forth. And if you still notice that it doesn't go anywhere, skip it. Boundary.
That's it.
Thank you. I think that's important to hear for a lot of our online activists here. The third one, we have a lot there. Let's see how far we can move through this, but let's get this going. Corporate campaigning, engaging positively with corporations to persuade them to change their activities. You want to reiterate a little bit on that?
Yeah, this is often done by professional campaigners that know how to do that. I did a little bit of that and I didn't like it. To be honest, that was not for me. That's the thing about activism, not everything is for everyone. And this is the one that you need to be kind of from that corporate world, speak corporate language, the things they like to hear, and be able to engage them positively to make them realize that they don't have to use animal products. They don't have to do this. There are better ways. It's not just for a new market of vegans that otherwise would use your product. It's just because it's good for the environment, it's good for the world, it's good for the workforce. You need to transform anything into a positive message for the company. So they see a profit. If they're a profit-making company, they see more money coming. If they're a social company, they see more supporters. And engage them until you persuade them. Sometimes it's more direct. You might become a shareholder, so you have a way to vote and you have your voice heard officially within the rules of the organization. Sometimes it's more indirect. But then the reason I don't like it is that it requires a lot of compromises. I'm not a corporate person. It requires a lot of wearing ties. I don't like wearing ties. So it's this kind of engagement that I'm not really that kind of person, but some people are, so that's for them.
If anybody who's listening is, let us know, reach out to either one of us, because I'm curious, like, especially to me, reach out to me, because I don't know a lot of vegans that are active in that field. But thanks for giving us a little insight into that. Now, we have a couple of more here. I'm not sure if we're going to go deeper into that, because they also seem, for a smaller part of the audience that is listening to this podcast, you listed lobbying, a type of campaigning targeting decision makers. Then you listed legal advocacy, campaigning in the judiciary by taking part in legal action on behalf of animals and activists. This is done legally to legally protect them or to seek the rulings of judges to advance the animal rights cause as the work of Animal Legal Defense Fund or the rights of vegans. Is there anything you would like to kind of like explain a bit more about that?
Well, there are ways to change the world. There you can change them by laws and you can change them by legal action. So you can go to a court and ask a judge to have a ruling that might change history. That's what happened to me with my legal case, for instance, in which from my legal case, ethical veganism is a protected belief because I went to a court and because the judge agreed with the evidence I produced. So this is a form of activism that happened to me because I was fired being a vegan. So it was an opportunity I used. But some people do that for a living. So they go and help other vegans that they've been discriminated against, or they try to change the law and lobby the law. For instance, you can challenge the government for not applying the law properly or being unconstitutional. And there are many legal cases at the moment try to give rights to individual animals that are in zoos. An elephant called Happy in the Bronx Zoo, as now there is legal action to say this element is a person. It should not be in captivity. And there are court cases to free Happy the elephant in the Bronx. And in Ecuador, recently, there was a judge that says, yeah, this particular woolly monkey that was captive and was and died, the rights of that woolly monkey were infringed because since the new constitution in Ecuador has declared that nature has rights, this individual is part of nature, so therefore that was a wrongdoing of the government. So things like that can be done from a legal point of view through the judiciary.
I love that, and I'm sure that not a lot of vegans are aware of that option. So if you're curious about that, I'll leave you with some more links down below, or you can reach us to Jordi personally. He's active on Facebook. Very, same like me. Now, the sixth thing you've listed here is research and investigations. I believe that those, like, I've been involved in very little of those, but for me, they were very active parts of activism, very engaged, very confronting. What's your experience with those?
I've done that for a long time. I was an undercover investigator for a long time. I'm a zoologist, I'm a researcher, I'm a scientist. So I could do research either by obtaining information in an open way through freedom of information request and processing the data and produce results. It's basically about showing what happens to the animals. That is often hidden. You need to have somebody telling to the world what happens. And you can either break the barriers and show it, that's the investigation, or use the data is available and process it in a way that shows reality, statistics, numbers, and things like that. And I produced many of these scientific reports exposing cruelty to animals that people didn't know before, and things like that. So you need to obviously have the right skills. As an investigator is a skill, and a researcher is also a skill. And it's hard, it's psychologically very hard to be an investigator. I don't recommend it to anyone. I would say, don't do it unless you're ready and you're psychologically prepared, because it's one of the hardest things to do, to go on undercover investigation, observe situation is wrong, and know that you cannot interfere, because your role at that point is to report, not to interfere. And if you interfere, the data won't work. Nobody will be persuaded that what you saw was right. So you have to have a lot of self-control emotionally, and it affects you. It burns you. So I don't recommend it to do it. Just a few people need to do it, not everyone, to get the information. And the people that are able to cope with it, thank them, but don't just think that it's an exciting, adventurous thing to do. It's a hard thing to do.
It's really challenging, yeah. Yeah. And if you want to like prepare yourself for that, I'm here for that. I'll help you with coping. And, you know, that's my job as a mindfulness and mental health coach. But I myself, I also don't do it at this moment in time. I find it is too draining and very heavy work. So also thank you for doing so much of that over such a time frame, Jordi. Okay. Yeah. So there is, let me see. You've listed 13 more. Let's go through them because I mean, like, we just really need to lay them out because a lot of people don't know about them. And it's really beautiful that you're actually spending your time with me here to give us a little more insights in your experience with that. So the next one you called pressure campaigning, thinking strategically and applying the right negative pressure to the weakest point of the animal exploitation companies and industries. So to me, this also sounds like something where somebody is quite engaged as an activist. So not somebody with a full-time job next to it, because this is a job, and like activism is work. So what's your experience with pressure campaigning?
Pressure campaigns do work, but they are also very specialized role. They normally work when they are done by animal protection organizations or vegan organizations that hire campaigners that have experience on this issue. You need to be very strategic. You need to think about one, how the system works, this particular industry you work in, which are the things that you get the money, the support, why they exist, and then trying to find out which are the weakest links. And then see how can you influence the weakest link. For instance, often in case of pressure campaigning, so you might see a situation where animals are exploited and you try to protest in the place where they exploit it. But perhaps if you protest in the front of one of the suppliers that supplies a product from which the exploitation is completely necessary, and you stop that supplier to do it, then you might stop it. To give you an example, it just happened recently. So there's been a lot of pressure campaigning in the issue of vivisection, animal research, trying to not just complain about universities doing research or companies, but going to airlines that transport the animals to the to the labs, and trying to ask the airlines, don't do that, please. Don't transport any animal that goes for vivisection. And many have said, okay, we won. Till the point that recently, I wrote an article about all the labs in the Canary Islands, that is from part of Spain. They cannot do research anymore because no airlines allows them to bring any animal anymore. So they said, we have to stop. So you see, the weakest link was identified and it worked.
That's amazing. That's a really smart way to apply activism, actually. But again, you said in the beginning, this is something that is often done by people that are hired by animal rights organizations or animal liberation organizations, because it is work. You got to do research and find that weakest link. But really, really powerful and impactful. Thanks for that example, by the way. The eighth one that you've listed here, which is something that I do see most vegans on Facebook that I connect with personally do, is animal care, volunteering to help animals in need, such as working in an animal sanctuary, fostering rescued animals, looking for a home, adopting animals who need help with their care, or even creating and running genuine animal sanctuaries. So this is something that I've also been engaged in because I live on Bali and we have a lot of street animals, especially street dogs that are just dumped here and there that are dying on the sides of the streets. So how can we not do that here? So that's a really big thing here on Bali. And something that I'm engaged in a lot, right? I think this is what a lot of people can relate to and what we don't have to underestimate, because any action that we take saves lives. If it's that one, or if it's anything like pressure campaigning. Any thoughts for you on this, on animals support and care?
I will only say that this is the kind of activism that when the people that does it, they don't define themselves as activists. They don't even know they're activists, but they are. So because they often do this without engaging to the public. They engage with the animals, they help the animals, they look after the animals. There is no demonstrations. He's not contacting anybody else, but he's activism because you are active, you're doing something and you're helping the animals that are not just the animals that you are the companion animals. Obviously you have a companion animal, you look after your companion animal because he's part of your family. But no, these people don't do that. They go beyond their own family to help other animals in need. And that's activism in my book.
I agree completely. And I also think that a lot of people that do that put a lot of their own life, not on hold, but invested into that. So it's a big act of kindness. And I want to make sure that everybody honors themselves in that way as well, right? To make sure that you're also nourishing your own self. Because when you do that, and like when I see myself running around for the street dogs and stuff, I know it can be very draining. And we have to remind ourselves that our energy is also important because our energy is what they perceive and receive as animals when we take care of them, right? Just as a little side note and reminder. Now, number nine, I think that's what most people do identify as the main way of activism. You wrote outreaching, organized actions taken place in the street or in a particular venue. Here on Bali, we do it on the beach because that's where most people are trespassing, aimed to encourage passersby or attendants to do a particular action. Yeah, I think this is what most people are familiar with. Anonymous for the Voiceless does the Cubes of Truth. We the Free WTF does the Diamonds, which is basically is a pretty similar way of doing street outreach or outreach. Anything you want to add on to this? I think this is very familiar for most listeners.
Yeah, I've done quite a lot of it. There are many types, could be leafleting, could be more sophisticated, could be tabling with a table, with choking, writing chalk. So you can express them in different ways, but they always involve talking to or engaging to somebody you never met before. And that is skill that you also get better with time and you can learn how to engage. It's all a communication exercise and you could communicate wrongly, communicate rightly, you learn with experience. Sometimes there are people that you are yourself that help you to reduce the probability to say the wrong thing at the wrong time. And that is always, but it's a communication skill. We do have it biologically. That's why I was saying the online issue that we don't have the face-to-face has all these handicap and problems. But we, when we do it face-to-face, biology is with us, human communication, body language is with us. So we are not alone. It's all the words that we learn plus billions of evolutions that told us how to behave friendly with another person so the other person becomes open, receptive, and listens to what you say. And they go with some information that you had before that hopefully will have an effect positively in their lives.
Yeah. I actually just recorded a video on that, which is called Implementing Coaching into Activism. Because I know that as a coach, we have a lot of, that's what I learned, a lot of communication skills, and they are very much hand in hand and we can use them. So I'll also put that link to that video. It's a 20-minute video in the show notes of this podcast. What's the next one? Exciting. Drum roll. Protests. Something I've done before a lot in Switzerland. Here on Bali, I don't do it that much because I know that a lot of expats here can get deported if they do things that the government doesn't like. It's a bit corrupt here, actually. A lot of people think it's paradise, but we have some corrupt government choices that have been made. So protests. You wrote public attention drawing actions performed by more militant activists where the emphasis is on a negative message, highlighting the cruelty of those who are being protested against, for example. So this is also something that I know a lot of activists have tried, have done, and have found to be draining and challenging because you're really out there and you're putting yourself with your message out there and you're in a little bit of an attack mode towards other people. What's your thoughts on this,
George? Yeah, you're right. The emphasis on the protest is on the negative. While other type of campaigning and activism is you focus on the positive, is on the negative because you're highlighting a negative issue to the people that are doing it. So therefore, that's where it's a protest. You are not happy with the world and you're not happy with what some people are doing and you're telling them that you're not happy. Therefore, is in itself by definition a negative, and you need to be a very well balanced person for not to be falling into a negative circle. If you keep doing this again and again, every day you go out and concentrate in the negative, you end up being negative yourself about other things. So you need to be very balanced, or you need to know how to deal with it and just do it and come back and remove all the negativity from you. But it's challenging because it might become aggressive. And if it passes the line from aggression to violence, that's a no-no for me. If it's a violent protest, it's not a vegan protest anymore. Veganism is about non-violence, about ahimsa, do no harm. Do no harm to whom? To anyone, not the ones you want. That will be species. Choosing to harm pigs and not to harm dogs, that's a species. Choosing to harm a human and not a non-human animal, that's also species. There's no harming for everyone. So therefore, you have to explain the negativity, but you also have to control the way you do it so you don't harm anyone by doing it.
Yeah. Very well said. The only thing I feel like adding on to this is that when we are choosing to go to demonstration, that we're making sure before and after to really take care of our own emotional landscape, our own emotional space. So if you want to do that, do that. I've done it, and I would have still been doing it because I'm a pro at my emotions. So I would still be in demonstrations if I wouldn't be living here, but somewhere else, like in my home country, Switzerland. Thanks for giving us that insight. There's three more that you've listed here. One is called the number 11, disruptions, directly interfering with an animal exploitation activity, disrupting it in a significant manner or stopping it altogether. What are your thoughts and experiences on that?
Yeah. This obviously, it becomes increasingly risky sometimes, because sometimes in order to do that, you have to break the law and then you might be arrested. Sometimes you don't have to break the law. You're just disruptive. For instance, recently there was a case where a famous actor went into a restaurant, a coffee shop, blew himself into the desk to protest that the vegan milk was more expensive than the non-vegan milk. That stopped the operation of the restaurant for a few seconds, and then he left. So that's a very minimal disruption. It did disrupt, but it created a lot of publicity. Often you just do it for the publicity rather than for the disruption itself. But some disruptions are very necessary. For instance, in hunting, fox hunting, which I've been campaigning against for a long time, the hunt saboteurs are the ones that go wild. They're trying to disrupt the hunt, prevent the hounds to chase and kill a fox. Now, this was legal for many years, so the hunt saboteurs were engaged in an illegal activity by disrupting something that was legal. But then hunting became illegal. The law was passed in 2004 that made fox hunting illegal, but the hunts carry on doing it. They found ways to do it. So now the hunt saboteurs are not the illegal ones anymore. Now it's like the hunters that are the illegal ones. So they're still disrupting in the same way, but there's been a shift on who is within the law now. So that, but you are interfering with an activity, in this case, an illegal activity, with the aim to stop that activity happening.
Hear that. Thanks for reiterating and explaining. The last two ones, we have number 12, resistance activism, actions performed by more militant activists consisting of blocking roads, buildings, or events in protest. I remember in the UK, the
rebellion,
that were they. Animal they blocked rebellion. All the supply chains for McDonald's, I think, for three and a half days with these bamboo constructs, and they made McDonald's not have supplies. And I think that goes into this category, right? So I was celebrating them for that. That was cool. That was heavy.
That will be a mix of resistance, because they blocked something, and also that was illegal, so they were arrested, and those pressure campaigning, because they identified the weakness of that structure. But sometimes you don't do that. You just do a stop street in the middle of a city. The animal rebellion comes from Extinction Rebellion, that they are the group that did this for the environment. So an offshoot of Extinction Rebellion is Animal Rebellion. But it's also risky, because the people are prepared to be arrested when they block roads, because obviously it's illegal. And they've been taken to court. But the strategy for them is that if you do it with a lot of people, the legal system will decide to not to prosecute them, because they can't cope with the number of people. So there's a logic there, but it's a risk as well. You have to be very prepared to take that risk.
I hear that. I haven't engaged in anything like that before, personally.
Well, neither do I. I don't do the illegal things. I'm also an immigrant. So I also very aware that being an immigrant, I just don't want to be deported for any reasons, although it would not happen in the UK, but who knows? So I always very carefully and only go within the legality. All my campaigning and activism has been always within the law.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's something that just popped into my mind, but I'm going to say that after we looked at the last thing, because I think that's one thing that sums up this whole podcast episode. So the 13th and last one that you've listed here is called animal liberation. And you even called it here perhaps the most extreme militant form of activism. It involves entering premises where animals are kept captive and either freeing them so they can escape into the surrounding areas or taking them out and relocating them elsewhere. Yeah, I've never done that myself before. That is a really, really militant. Mm-hmm.
It is, and it was commonly known years ago in the 80s and the 90s in the UK with the Animal Liberation Front and all the other organizations that came from that. There was a style of activism that was quite common in the past, especially where there were fewer laws that allowed to do other types of campaigning, but still happens. And it has pros and cons in the sense of what you try to achieve. You know, sometimes freeing an animal and leaving it to the environment doesn't mean that that animal will survive if that animal is not adapted to that environment. So you have to be very careful. It's not sounds kind of very dramatic and it might be right all the time, but it's not always right. Sometimes it's wrong.
I agree. And I had so many conversations about that, especially like when we're looking at the domesticated animals, as you said, would they be better off if we just free them and put them somewhere? Because over the past decades, they have been like recreated. Like animals are not all in their original shape. Same with foods. A tomato has been changing over the past decades as well. Same like a cow has or a dog has. I mean, the example from wolf to dog is a great one. So also a little reflection and focus on that freeing an animal is not always the best solution for the animal. So thanks for pointing that out.
Mm-hmm. And I would like to add as well that one thing that happened with these more radical and militant types of activism that might lead to arrest and conviction, sometimes spend years in prison, is that when you're in prison, you cannot be an activist anymore. So it removed the activist from the activist pool. And that is not a good strategy. Do something that might likely or not in a slow probability remove you from your activism. That doesn't seem to be very effective.
Good thought. You're blocking yourself from being an activist by being too active and thinking you're creating impact. Good thought. Thanks for sharing. Haven't thought of that like that before. Yeah. But yeah, true. Wow. So these are the 13 forms that you've listed in this article. The article is longer. There is more things to it. That's why I'm going to share it with everybody who's listening in the show notes or in the description of this video on YouTube. What just popped in my mind before, and what I would love to ask you now, of course, that's kind of like the burning question, what this episode is all about. What do you think is the most effective way of being an activist?
Which is, I answer it at the end of my article, so for those who want to read, but essentially, there is one that is the most effective, but we don't know which one. We will never know which one, because to be effective in a transformative social movement, you need to see it a long term. You see in the future, in 100 years, 200 years, what we're doing now will have an effect then. So we cannot measure it now. We have to measure it then. Therefore, it might be things that we do that are more effective than others, but we don't know which one it is. And they might only work in particular places or better in combination with others. So the only thing you can conclude is the most things we try and the more activists are out there that do more things and do activism for longer, then the higher the probability that the right combination of tactics at the right time will appear. So that's the only thing. So any type of a strategy that reduces the number of activists or the variability or the diversity of those activists is not gonna increase the probability to get the right activism that does the right effect and impact. So the only thing we can do is keep inventing type of activism, keep trying as an individual different types, and from your point of view, from a personal point of view, find the ones that work for you, the ones that fulfill you, that satisfy you, because there's no point to imitate somebody else's activism if you don't feel fulfilled. Because remember, activism comes from within. Outreach might come from outside, somebody asking you for help. Activism comes from the need to act. You feel the need to act. You learn something about the world, you're not happy about that, and you feel an urge to act. And if you try to act and don't fulfill your satisfaction of you doing the right thing, you're failing yourself. That urge will not disappear. You will keep doing things. You might cross the line, become violent, go to places you don't want to go, and fail. So in order to keep acting and satisfy this need, find that niche that works for you, for your character, for your location, for the legal framework where you live, and try several. And every now and then try another one to see whether your favorite is still your favorite and be experimenting, but just don't waste time in things that don't fulfill you. That's my lesson.
Amen. Amen to that. Wow. Thank you so much for your insights, Jordi. I think this is really valuable for everybody out there. And I'm curious, you know, like, let us know on social media what you think are your power zones in activism, or like your thriving zones. For me personally, it's outreach. I love to be connected to people in person, and online activism also works really well for me because I've gotten very skilled at understanding, you called it so nicely, a language, a new language. I've gotten good at understanding the language people speak online. So that's kind of my current power zone and where I invest my energy into. So let us know what you invest your energy into. The best way you can do that is, if you're not a member yet, I have a Facebook group. It's called the Mental Health and Mindfulness Academy. It is for vegans and activists and not vegan activists that are about to be vegan activists. There's also a lot of LGBTQ friendly people in there. I'm a queer man, so welcome yourself into that group. I'll leave the link there. And in there, you can share with us what kinds of activism are your power zones. And if you want to get in touch with Jordi more, Jordi is also on Facebook. Do you feel like you want to share any other resources, how they can get in touch with you? Or is Facebook the main one for you at this moment?
Facebook or Twitter, I'm in all social medias. I use either Jordi Casamitjana or JC Costa. That's the other word I use. But Vegan FTA, which is the place where this article we discussed was published, is one of my main clients. Most of the things I write them there. So if you go to Vegan FTA, you will be able to write, to read a lot of the stuff I produce. And get my book, because I explain it everything in this.
I'm going to read that book. I'm going to get it ASAP, and I'm going to read it. And I want you to do the same thing. Everybody out there, get that book. Wow.
Well, you will learn things about the book, because a part of my legal case and the reasons I become a vegan, I also talk about the history of veganism that many activists don't know about. They think it's a modern thing. It's been there for millennia. Millennia we're talking about. And if you don't know your background as a philosophy, you will be easily moving off track. It's good to have the foundations of the philosophy. I always say, before veganism, the first thing you need to do, my advice is, first get the philosophy, then get the behavior. Don't do it the other way around. First learn why and you do this, and then do it, not the other way around.
Let's do that. I'm gonna read that book. It's been a while since I read a book. I just published a post on social media where I was like, I don't read books. Not since a long time, I haven't read any books. I've just channeled information. I have coaches, I have mentors. That's how I learn. But that book I want to read, especially because I've gotten the time to speak to you personally. So thank you again, Jordi, so much for being a part of this episode. Everybody who's listening, who liked this conversation, who thinks it's valuable, share it with your friends, share it with, don't be a little ego prick, share it with the people you love, if you think it's valuable for them as well. And I want to thank you so much for taking your time here. Bless you so much, and have a beautiful day or night wherever you are. Mwah. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Vegan Changemaker podcast. Please share it with your friends, your family, your social network, and your loved ones. If you want to get your impact to the next level, I invite you to take the Vegan Impact Quiz. I created it to help you figure out what the next steps are for you to elevate your vegan impact and create more significant influence in the world. Check out the link, I left it for you in the show notes, and I'm curious to see where you're gonna land and what your next steps will be. Let's veganize this world together, dear vegan friend.